Good morning. Good morning, good morning. There's a Buddhist ritual we often do in Buddhist cultures to begin this kind of event. And for some of you who are not familiar with this, I'll explain it, but you don't have to do it. You can just sort of anthropologize. Just look as anthropologists and see how we Buddhists do this. I'm from a, as I was saying yesterday, Quaker House, I'm from a very Orthodox tradition, a very conservative kind of guy, but an Orthodox tradition that emphasizes orthopraxy. Orthodoxy is doctrinal. Orthopraxy is the implementation of doctrine or teaching for the enlightened mind. Without orthopraxy, you just have views and opinions, basically. Without a structure of teaching, you can wander. You can lose the way. So I come from a tradition in from Thailand originally, northeast Thailand, where the emphasis was a lot on meditation, communal lifestyle, but understanding the text enough to implement them. So that's what I try to share. And part of the ritual that we do in Buddhism is the ritual on homage, refuges, and precepts. So that is on page 72, and I'll just go through that. I did this with the Quaker group yesterday, so any of you who were there, my apologies. People ask us, how do you become a Buddhist? And not that I'm asking to become a Buddhist. The doing of Buddhism is what is important to me rather than the believing in Buddhism, because it's very easy to just pick up Buddhism as another cultural belief. So I switch from my native beliefs. Maybe I'm a Christian or an agnostic or an atheist, and then I take up a whole set of Buddhist beliefs. But it's still a set of beliefs. So what's important to me is to have a teaching, but also to enliven the teaching through meditation and contemplation. Obviously, then the teaching goes beyond just the words to insight, to understanding, and to enlightenment. This ritual then begins with homage to the Buddha. And as I was saying yesterday, for me, the image of the Buddha, the recollection of the Buddha, is a very inspiring thing, obviously, because I've taken the path and it's been very fruitful for me. And what's inspiring about it is that the Buddha realized something which was very profound. We call it enlightenment. But he also said that we had that possibility. We have the possibility of enlightenment. And so it's a very... it's both a statement of gratitude, of awe, and of hope. Buddhism is a very positive religion. It's interesting the way it approaches life. It says, if you are willing to look at your suffering, you can go beyond suffering. So sometimes people who don't understand the Buddha's encouragement to look at our conflicts as a sort of negative teaching, but actually it's very positive, because the Buddha says there is a profound possibility in human consciousness for liberation from suffering, for deep compassion, for deep stillness, for deep wisdom. So when I chant homage to the Buddha, Namo Tassa, when I chant that, obviously I have a history with this, but it brings up for me very wholesome states of mind of gratitude, of hope, of possibility of enlightenment, and so on. And this is the way I've learned to use ritual as a way of enlivening the mind and making the mind move towards that which is wholesome and skillful. So the Buddha image and the bowing, it's just a piece of plaster. Nice piece of plaster. Aesthetically, it's nice, right? But it's more than aesthetics. It's more than just beauty. For me, when I see a Buddha image, I'm always reminded of the possibility of the teacher and the possibility the teacher offers. And when I bow, I try to bow to bring my mind to a state of awakening, of presence, of knowing the way things are. So then it's a symbol that I refer to for my own practice rather than an idol which I worship. So there's a difference between idolatry and symbology. And obviously I'm not that stupid to be bowing to an idol. And I've got a bit more clever in me. But sometimes people then don't understand rituals and they make these sort of shallow assumptions. So when we do this ritual, I would chant Namo Tassa three times, homage to the Buddha, and those who want to, we have some people who are from Sri Lanka and so on are familiar with this, then they would recite back these three homages to the Buddha. Then the next three sections are homage, are what we call refuge. And refuge is a very important idea in Buddhism that it kind of takes a while to intuitively pick up what we mean. So we say we take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So we're chanting on page 72 there, Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami. Now Buddha, as I've been taught, I use the word in two ways again. One is historical Buddha, the being who offered this teaching and with which I work and in which I am inspired. But then the reference, the word itself, is the awakened mind, or awake, to be awake or to be present. And that's not doctrinal, that's not cultural, that's not a religious per se, but it's that which is within us all, that we can be awake to the way things are. We can be aware, we can be present. So I can be annoyed at someone and follow the annoyance and get lost in the annoyance, or I can notice, oh, this is annoyance. And that awake quality is what we mean refuge in Buddha. So you don't have to be a card-carrying Buddhist for that. It's not asking any belief. And it's something we do all the time. Because if we weren't, you know, we'd just be totally kind of reactive, suffering beings. So the awake mind, it's always there, it's always present. Then the Dharma we use in two ways as well. One is the conventional way of the teachings themselves. And those teachings are what I use as my intellectual basis for my practice and for my own contemplations and investigations. But Dhamma is also the truth of the way things are. It's not an opinion, but it's a truth of the way things are. And how is life? Well, life is this way now. And when I'm with life just the way it is, in all its modalities, and I'm just present to life just the way it is, I just know life is this way, that's refuge in Buddha knowing Dharma. Now it's not like an opinion about this moment, it's not a thought. So how is this moment now? If I awake to this moment and just hold this moment in that awake way, I know this moment. And for each of us this moment is different. You know, for one person it's warm in here, for one person it's cold, one person's thinking something else. But that sense of awake presence to the way things are is refuge. Because from that you can understand life, from that you can work. If I'm just in a reactive mode, I just react through habits. And then the Sangha, refuge in Sangha, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami, is, conventionally speaking, it's the order of practitioners, the order of enlightened practitioners, of monastics, people practicing. But you can't really taking refuge, you can have friends, but refuge in another person is pretty dodgy. Because they might disappoint you, they will die, they might have arguments, they might have misunderstandings, they might be deluded. So refuge in Sangha is, as an internal quality, it's refuge in the doing of the work. It's refuge in being diligent, in living a good ethical life, in practicing compassion and generosity, in contemplating the nature of human consciousness. So it's like living the good life, doing what is right. And that is a refuge too. So if I, as I was saying yesterday, if I'm feeling annoyed at someone, and I have the temptation just to dump on my annoyance on them, and I take refuge in right speech, and I say, no, right speech says you speak in concord, and I pause, and I'm restrained in speech, what have I done? I've taken refuge in right speech. I've made that the criteria rather than the criteria of my emotion in that particular moment. So you have these three ideas: Buddha, knowing Dhamma, living the good life. And that's what refuge is. And you see, that's also, that's not doctrinal. That's human existence. That's good spiritual life, I think. So those are ways we think about the three refuges. And then the precepts, 73, they're the sort of basic ethical guidelines which the Buddha recommended that we live by. And they're phrased, I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. And the idea of precepts is the idea of training. So it's the idea that you train in action and speech in a way which is wholesome and skillful and is a foundation for enlightenment. The Buddha had a teaching called the gradual teaching, in which he said, in the way he laid out the teaching, the first step in the spiritual life is generosity. That's how he would begin for someone who wasn't. And the second step was good ethics, good moral basis. And those two, generosity and morality, create a foundation for enlightenment. Then it's possible to contemplate. It's easier to contemplate. So the ethical principles which the Buddha lays out for us, the way I'll do this ritual, I'll do the Pali, word by word, and then I'll say the whole English line. So the first precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that, the life of any living creature. So the whole sense of nonviolence. And cultivating nonviolence. So rather than destroying on a whim the things I don't like, we cultivate nonviolence. And you imagine if the world, you know, if that precept was just kept, what a different kind of a world it would be. Second precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. So a life of honesty, just a life of impeccability in that way. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. The way this is translated, sexual misconduct, that's one aspect of it. So fidelity, a sense of moderation in one's appetites rather than promiscuity. But the word kama also means sensuality. So when you start to refine this precept, it's also about not eating tons of popcorn or not watching endless YouTubes. It's the mind always being distracted into hedonistic activities. It's a mind which is distracted into hedonistic activity. And as long as I'm distracted, I'm not available for enlightenment. I'm just always caught in the changing conditions. So this precept can be refined a lot into a sense of moderation, of sense restraint, which is very, very helpful, very skillful for the mind becoming calmed and a sense of presence being stronger. The fourth precept, undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech. And that's a really challenging training, to not use language or communication methods in a way which is untruthful, which is divisive, which is coarse and harsh and hurtful, but to use language in ways which is harmonious, which brings truth to culture, which brings beauty to culture. And you know, with words, words can be so beautiful. Like someone gave me a Wendell Berry book, and I read this poem this morning on fear, and it's just, oh, it's such a beautiful poem. And yet words can all be so cruel. You know, one word coming from the wrong place can really hurt us. So language is important, and the Buddha gives a lot of instruction on training in right communication. And the idea is training. You can't get it right every time, but you try. You try to be more aware. And so that brings you to a kind of sensitivity to life, to your own impulses, to your social interactions. The fifth precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness. So sobriety, basically just being with whatever your mind presents. Drugs which are medications for difficult psychological constructions, they're quite okay, you know, because that's maybe one of the good things of our society. There are medications which can be helpful, but one of the pitfalls in our society, it seems, that they can be overused, and those are difficult issues. But the idea is sobriety, just being, so you could be more mindful. So those are an undertaking that we determine as a kind of lifestyle. So I'd like to do that formally with you. For those who would like to do it, and Curtis, you're going to ask. So usually one person from the group asks, and then there's a sort of statement and response. Curtis, if you would start. So I'll repeat the Namo Tassa formula three times, and when I'm finished, then you can repeat after me, anyone who wants to do this. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Samputassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Samputassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Samputassa. Refuges line by line. Bhutang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi Bhutang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tisaranagamanang nititam. Amamantu. And if you go over then the five precepts, so what I'll do is I'll do the Pali word by word, and then I'll do the English in one line. Panatipata, Veramani, Sikapadam, Samadhyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. Adinadana, Veramani, Sikapadam, Samadhyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. Kamesu Michachara Veramani Sikapadang Samadhyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. Musavada Veramani Sikapadang Samadhyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech. Surameraya Maja Pamadatana Veramani Sikapadang Samadhyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness. Imani panchasikapadani silena sukatingyanti silena boga sampata silena niputingyanti tasama silang sotaye. So we'll do some meditation. So begin by just being awake to how you feel sitting here now. So this idea of awake to the way things are. So physically, how your posture feels. You feel hot or cold. Your mind is peaceful or confused. So you establish presence, awareness. And turn your attention to listening. So listen to the sounds that exist now. And adopt an attitude of receptivity. You just let whatever sounds are there come to you. So it's not, we're not thinking about the sound or judging it, it's just the way it is. So the sense of being awake, that's what we mean by refuge in Buddha. And present, and then just knowing what's going on is Dharma. The movement of events coming and going, present, knowing what they are. Not in an analytical way, but just as pure knowing, as pure presence. So notice when you're just awake, there is discernment when you're not thinking about it. So there's a kind of purity in this open attention, receptive awareness. And this quality of awakeness is what we try to cultivate in meditation. And you can touch it very easily just by listening. So consider that the sort of standard that we are working with. It's the sort of touchstone of our practice, just the simple awake listening. Now you can use other sense objects to come to the same attitude, the same awakeness, because it doesn't really change. So if we use the body, bring your attention to the base of your posture, feel the weight of the body on the chair, on the floor, and just become conscious of pressure, heat, discomfort. And it's the same thing, receptive awareness. On the base of the body. I like to use language of suggestion, so I like to use the word receptivity, and that's a suggestion for an attitude, non-anticipation. So to awaken, what do you need to do? You need to let go of thinking about the past and the future. And you need to let, in this case, let the body become, come into consciousness, body feelings. Feel your spine. So let the sensations of the spine become conscious. So it's like you have to wait, attentive, and you start to feel the spine. Then feel the shoulders, arms, and hands. Become conscious of that. Move attention to your head, to your face, to your mouth. Feel the lips, the tongue, the palate. So again, it's the same awareness, same quality of receptivity, different localization. Don't squeeze your eyes looking for something. Be receptive and let this come into consciousness. Localize your attention at the ears, so the ear canals, the ears themselves. So each time the tendency to be scattered into fantasies or whatever you compose attention. Collect attention and sustain this receptive, awake quality. The nose, nostrils, bridge of nose. Again, don't squeeze your eyes looking, so non-anticipation. Your eyes, the eye sockets, the eyes themselves. Quite often we perceive ourselves as sitting in the brain looking out through the eyes, but notice that the sensation of the eyes is in awareness. notice that awareness contains the body, it's in awareness. Feel the whole head. And feel the whole body. So full conscious presence. There's no need to think about this. And notice that in awareness there is silence and discernment. And the body is in awareness. Perceive the body as in awareness, as opposed to you being in the body. Change the sense base, listen to sound. Notice that sound is in awareness. Perceive the sound as in awareness. Feel the body, feel the whole body, and perceive the body as in awareness. So this is what we mean by awake to Dhamma, refuge, Buddha knowing Dhamma, not cultural but existential. Now you could just sustain that for long periods of time, but it's difficult. The mind, we like to do things. So we can choose some kind of focal point, a localization, and then practice that same awake quality for the object of attention. So choose the breath, become conscious of the sensations of breathing. So you wait, you make that intention, you wait. And you start noticing the breathing of the body. And then notice the cycles of breathing. Notice the difference between in and out breath. Notice the end of an out-breath and the beginning of an in-breath. And the end of the in-breath, beginning of the out-breath. So now we're sustaining this awake quality. by discerning the different aspects of the breath cycle. And with your thinking, planning, worrying mind, when you notice that's happening, just awaken to sound. Use sound as your grounding. Come back to silent attention. Pick up the breath. Flow attentively with the breath. So the most important thing is to be patient with the wandering mind, but also to make it clear, the awake mind. And then proceed from there. All right, let's work with that for a while, or practice that, explore that. So this requires patience and a certain friendliness. So try to be friendly with the way things are. And the quality of patience is crucial because it can be so frustrating, the endless proliferations of thought. But if you keep applying these principles, awakening, sustaining the awakened mind, then that begins to dominate. But the attitude, helpful if it's a friendly attitude in the awakening. So we're not trying to get rid of thought, we're just choosing an alternative to the thinking mind. We're moving to the awake mind. we'll convene again at 1 o'clock. And if you're staying with us for the afternoon, just contemplate this awake quality of presence and see if you can just sustain that with whatever's happening. Because in this awake quality of mind, there are two things that can happen. First of all, you're well informed with what's going on. So yesterday I was reading an article on relics and a commentary from St. Augustine on relics. And I was reading the article, interested in it, and I could see that my mind was, it began with cynicism and skepticism, good Western chap. Then I read the article, I was informed of a certain things. Then my mind moved to, oh, that's an interesting take, more sort of sense of trust. And then the writer threw in something at the end, and then there was a bit of mistrust. So being awake through the whole reading, it wasn't just about getting information, it was also understanding my own mind. Now when I understand the movement of my own mind, then I can make choices which are skillful, hopefully. And we oftentimes make assumptions about life, but we're not aware of those assumptions. And then from those wrong or incorrect or deluded assumptions, we operate and create suffering for ourselves and others. So the awake mind is not a judgment about life. It's really noticing life, both in its internal and external aspects. And the second thing that the awake mind presents to us is an analogy I was offering yesterday, is when you have a printed page, I have the black ink, little marks, and I'm reading that, and I'm absorbed into that, and chanting that, and then there's also the page. I don't notice the page, because I'm interested in the subject, in the topic, in the ideas, and awareness very much is that too. There's the functional aspect of awareness which helps me live skillfully, but also awareness itself is an interesting thing. The whole sense of presence, it's like the page. And we usually are so enthralled by the objects on the page that we don't notice the page, as an analogy. So when we begin to turn the mind to the mind, turn awareness on awareness, it becomes very, very interesting, because you cannot really find awareness as an object. You can only be that awareness. And that brings us, I think, to what we would consider the spiritual qualities of consciousness. So just, I thought I'd dwell on that after lunch. If I dwelt on that now, I'd miss my lunch. And I do have priorities. So if you'll excuse me, I'll go into that other room, and those who would like to join us again, we'll see you for 1 o'clock.